This is Soundcheck at 93.9 FM and WNYC.org. I'm Julie Burstein, sitting in for John Schaefer. If you've ever wanted to deepen your understanding of bluegrass music beyond the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, my first guest today is a person to talk to. Stephanie Legend is a writer and photographer. Her first book, Homegrown Music, Discovering Bluegrass, came out last year. And her latest book, From Every Stage, Images of America's Roots Music, is a handsome new compendium of some 200 photos and interviews with musicians like Odetta, Jimmy Martin, Arlo Guthrie, and Pete Seeger. You can see some of her photographs on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org. Stephanie Legend, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, Julie. Nice to be here.
Now, Stephanie, what got you into this kind of music? How did you start?
Literally, it was by answering an ad in the Daily Record of Morristown.
That's not a usual way in, I don't think.
True, and not usually in New Jersey for bluegrass. But I literally, a year after I came out of Rutgers University, Livingston College, I answered an ad for a writer-editor wanted, knowledge of bluegrass and old-time country music preferred. And I had often said, okay, I want to be a journalist. I am a journalist. But what can I do to combine my love of music with journalism? And I never really dreamed of working in bluegrass. I barely knew what it was. I had a lot of folk sensibilities from my father and my mother, and actually a lot of other genre sensibilities, you know, Broadway and classical, things like that. But I said, well, let's give it a shot. I've grown up around this music all my life since I had moved around. I'd lived in Louisiana and Kansas City as well as New Jersey and had heard all these different forms of music. So to make a long story short, I went in for the interview, got the job, and was hired as the assistant editor of Pickin' Magazine, the magazine of bluegrass and old-time country music, which at the time was based in Cedar Knolls, New Jersey.
Cedar Knolls, New Jersey, yes. For the magazine about bluegrass.
That's right.
Very interesting.
That's right.
And here you are. Many of the photographs in your new book are from the 80s.
I was hired in 75 at Pickin' Magazine, and I've been doing this 30 years now, which for me seems amazing. I didn't 30 years ago dream I would still be working in bluegrass music 30 years later. But I started heavily photographing. I did a little bit of photography during the mid-70s when I first came on board with Pickin', but I bought my first real camera, shall we say, professional camera in 1980. A week before I went to Europe just on vacation and started to shoot, came back and started to shoot musicians. And it's been going strong ever since.
In your book, Homegrown Music, you open with an introduction about how bluegrass was formed. For people who may not know much about it, can you tell us a little bit about how this music got started?
Well, in a nutshell, it has a lot of roots. A lot of people like that term roots and branches today. I tend to use bends and blends. Its origins really encompass a number of traditions, including the Irish, the Celtic fiddling traditions, the ballads of the British Isles, the mountain ballads that either formed or were renewed over here in the Appalachian region. There's a lot of both Anglo and African-American gospel tradition in bluegrass. There's a lot of blues sensibility in bluegrass music also. And then there's an influence of even jazz and swing. And of course, there's the early country music that evolved in the early 20th century. Bill Monroe, the father of bluegrass music, grew up around this music and kind of shaped it into a format that was very, very palatable on a commercial level. And, I won't try and give the entire biography or history of bluegrass there, but it's generally, and this is something that's often debated among scholars, but it's generally accepted that bluegrass's genesis, or the genesis of it can be pinpointed, let's say that, between the years 1945 and 1946, when Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys at that time brought on Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and the Scruggs playing on the banjo is that many people believe that is what really cemented the sound that we identify as bluegrass today, which encompasses many other factors.
It's interesting to hear you talk about that and think that that genesis moment in the 40s.
Exactly.
And then you got started in the 70s. So mm-hmm. You've been with this music for half of its life.
Exactly. We're going into the 60-year celebration of bluegrass as a recognized distinctive genre. And indeed, I've sometimes go back, oh my goodness, I'm there 30 years already. Yes, that's half the life of bluegrass. But it also makes the point that people don't realize it's a very young genre compared to other genres.
In your book, your new book, with the photographs, you also have interviews. And mm-hmm. I was particularly struck by a wonderful conversation you had with a young bass player, Roy M. Husky. Can you tell me a little bit about him?
Roy was a wonderful bass player. Unfortunately, he died at an early age. He and his dad both, who was a very famous bass player himself, Roy Sr., who was actually Junior Husky. It's very confusing because the Roy Jr. was the Roy Jr. was known affectionately as Roy Jr., but he wasn't really a junior because of his middle name, I guess. But to make a very long story short, both died at 40 and 43, respectively, of lung cancer. The father, Junior Husky, was on the original Will the Circle Be Unbroken project. And Roy Husky Jr., or the younger, we'll say, who was a good friend of mine, he was on, I believe it was the second album, if memory serves me correctly right now. And his bass playing, though, was among the finest. He was so respected among bass players everywhere, and he probably appeared on more recordings as a studio musician than you could even put in an encyclopedia.
What I found striking about the interview was this absolute sense of genuineness in this man, and that you didn't get a sense that he thought, oh, I am this great bass player. He was just learning as he was going along.
Exactly. He was a very warm person, and that is one of only two interviews we know of that he ever gave. And I should point out, all the interviews that appear in my book were never published before for whatever reason. I either didn't shop them or whatever reason. But I spoke with his wife, and she said that is one of only two she knew of that he ever gave.
I know we have a little bit of music of his father, Junior Husky. Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting piece in that it's the Byrds' Pretty Boy Floyd, but we can hear Junior Husky on the bass in this.
Well, gather around me, children, a story I will tell about Pretty Boy Floyd the outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee on a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in a wagon as into town they rode.
We're listening to a little bit with Junior Husky on bass, and his son, Roy Husky, is one of the pictures in a new book by Stephanie Legend. And Stephanie, one other thing about Roy Husky, the younger, was that I was fascinated to hear that he heard music in colors.
Yes, it's called synesthesia, and I never had the opportunity to really speak with him on that a lot, but after he died, I had the opportunity to re-interview John Hartford, whom I knew for many years. And, of course, we've also lost John Hartford in recent years. And John started to give me some insight about Roy's hearing in colors as to, like, which note was what color and things like that.
But it sounded like Roy Husky was afraid to tell anyone because he thought they'd think he was crazy.
Exactly. But he could, apparently he said that B-flat was black and it was the last note you would hear before you die. And it's kind of sad, but indeed that is what he said, to his wife, and he often would say things like that. But I have some very touching photos of both John and Roy playing together because I came to know both tremendously through their partnership. I would see them down at the Bottom Line many times in other local area festivals and clubs. And in fact, one of the photos of John and Roy is in my upcoming exhibit at the Country Music Hall of Fame. And I'm thrilled that they notified me that that's the one they want. I'm actually making a gift of one photo to the Hall of Fame. And that's the one they chose because they're thrilled with just what it demonstrates of the personalities of the two musicians, because there was a certain synergy between the two of them that was very, very special.
When you take photos, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for the right moment. I don't care, in a sense, and I know that sounds terrible as a photographer, I don't care so much about the lighting situation necessarily or what film I'm using. Of course, I try to use the right film. You don't always have that opportunity. I do almost exclusively non-flash photography because of the settings. Flash disturbs the subjects on stage
oftentimes. But these are dark stages.
Exactly. So I use a lot of pushed film, what we call pushed film, where you push the stops and it's very high-speed film. And it can be a little grainier, but I've found good quality film I work with in a good lab, for starters, for printing. But what I'm looking for is exactly the right moment to snap the shutter. I don't know. I think I feel humbly so, but I feel that that's my forte, is I know when to snap it. And I try to go for the very different shot. And I really try to become part of the music as I'm shooting it. And I don't know how else to explain that in words except by, you know, showing my photographs.
Well, let's talk about a few of them, because mm-hmm. I know we have a couple on our website mm-hmm. at the soundcheck page of WNYC.org. And the first one we have on a little slideshow is a wonderful photo you have of the singer Odetta.
Oh, yes.
And I know in the caption you talk about a little whiff of smoke, which is incense that she's put into her guitar.
Mm-hmm. That was taken at Carnegie Hall, one of the, I think, the only time I ever had permission. You have to, of course, have permission.
Lots of Carnegie permission.
Oh, yes. And you can only stand in certain spots and things like that. And I remember being, number one, extremely nervous because I had an older camera back then, and you could hear my shutter every snap because it's so acoustic in Carnegie Hall. I did not shoot more than a roll of film that night. I don't believe I shot more than a roll. I don't recall shooting more than a roll. So I was very, very conservative, and I'm just lucky I got anything from where I was, you know, hand-holding, no flash, you know, long lens. This particular shot, and it's about 20 years ago the shot was taken, and Odetta was in her grand outfits. She would stick incense into her peg head.
I'm surprised the stagehands at Carnegie Hall allowed that.
Well, so. Who knows if they did. You know, she probably just did it. But I didn't know, of course, after I took the shot that I had actually captured the smoke coming, you know, the swirls of smoke coming off the end of the incense, and it's in the photo. And I'm thrilled that that was one of the photos. Not only is it in my upcoming exhibit, but it's the one of the three photos, I believe, that the publisher placed on its website to promote the book. So I guess it's a winning photo, but I love it because it's just some very fond memories of that evening too, albeit a rather nerve-wracking evening.
Where you were worried about the click, click, click of your camera. Well, let's listen to a little bit of Odetta just to get ourselves into that mood.
Did you come to see me hang by the gallows pole? I didn't bring no silver, didn't bring no gold. I've come to see you hanging by the gallows pole. By the gallows pole, oh God. Hangman, hangman, slack your rope, slack it for a while. Think I see my sweetheart coming riding a many a mile, riding a many a mile, oh God. Riding a many a mile.
You have a challenging job of making something that's so visceral and emotional in terms of the way that people connect through their voices and their music and capturing it in a moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think of it as a job, although I definitely go into job mode when I'm shooting. I mean, when I know I'm there to shoot, I just have to kind of ignore people and go on with my life. Also, I'm very petite, as you know, because you're sitting here with me, and it makes for interesting situations when I'm really not tall enough to shoot a stage and I kind of have to elbow my way up or stand tiptoe on a chair as I did with, I think, the other shot that's on your side, I believe, is Steve Riley. And that one was actually taken while I was teetering from a chair trying to get it at stage level to capture the shot.
Yes, we do have a picture of Steve Riley.
Exactly.
Can you talk about where that was and who he is?
Steve Riley heads up the Mamou Playboys. He's a Cajun player and he's playing accordion in the shot. And that was taken, I don't remember the year offhand, but it was at Waterloo Village at the Crawfish Fest that used to take place there. In New Jersey. Yes. Not all of my books are from New Jersey, but there are certainly, since I've lived here a lot, there are a bunch of them. But it was just one of those strange situations where I had to stand on a chair and I happened to capture the shot just so. Again, I try not to overthink it. I get into the feel of the music by looking through the lens. I don't know. Again, I don't know how to explain it. It's just that is my music for me, is through that lens. And I don't always enjoy the concert as a result because I get so lost in my shooting. It's very interesting. When I don't go somewhere with a camera, I probably enjoy it more in terms of just the sheer pleasure of the music.
Because you're not focusing on how to make that music visual.
Exactly. Because when I am behind the lens, and for example, this coming weekend I'll be at the Philly Folk Festival, I'll be down there in the photographer's pit and I will just be totally absorbed by the music. I will totally be focused on looking through the lens, watching and instinctively waiting for the right moments. You have to hear it without even seeing it. And that's what I try to do when I shoot it.
You're listening to Soundcheck. I'm Julie Burstein, sitting in for John Schaefer, and my guest is Stephanie Legend, who has just come out with a new book called From Every Stage, Images of America's Roots Music. And on our website at soundcheck@wnyc.org, you can see some of Stephanie's pictures, including one of Jimmy Martin.
Jimmy Martin, the king of bluegrass, he was known as. We lost him in May, unfortunately. And he was quite the colorful character, as you can see from the shot. It just captures his typical stage attire and his personality on stage, because he just had this loud and furious voice that was wonderful. And I just feel the photo captures it, and you can see the excitement of bluegrass music in that photograph.
Now, these photos, when I look through them, I can see they are from someone who really loves this music and loves the people who perform it. Did you ever find yourself taking pictures that you thought, this is not putting it in the light that I would like to show?
I can't say that, because I'm not going to shoot something I don't like. I don't shoot exclusively music, although certainly as my profession I do. But I tend to, even as driving here today, I can give you an example. As I was driving on the turnpike, I find that I look at things in a different way, I think. As I was, speeding along, 60, 65 miles an hour, whatever it was. Oh, I shouldn't have said that, should I? Speeding along.
It's past.
I saw the, I don't know what you call the train car when it's like the working car.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Whatever it is. And they were zipping down the rail yard alongside the turnpike. Coming toward me on the right-hand side, and the two workers were on the front of the train, and the wind was, whipping their hair back, and to me, set against all the industry in the background, I don't know, in my mind, I clicked it, and it's stuff like that I just like to look and see, and if I'd had a camera, I probably would have clicked it. It's not necessarily what I shoot.
Not while you're
sell.
Driving,
right.
I hope.
I have tried that on occasion, I will admit, but I try not to.
One of the other pictures that we have on the web is the Fairfield Four and the Nashville Bluegrass Band. Can you talk about how you took that picture?
That was at one of the awards show, the International Bluegrass Music Association awards show. I don't remember where that one was actually held. I believe that was in, since I don't have it in front of me, I believe that was in Louisville. It was either Louisville or Owensboro, Kentucky, at one of the performing arts centers. And that was simply an awards show shot. They were up on a beautifully lit stage. No flash. I don't like to disturb anybody, whether it's allowed or not. And I just snapped it. And, they exude such emotion anyhow when they're performing together. And I believe they were singing a cappella, of course, in that number. Everyone, has the hand cupped to the ear so they can hear themselves and things like that. And it's those little things that I like to finesse and wait for to capture in a photo for just those right moments.
One of my favorite pictures from your book is of four women, I think in Greenwich Village,
yes,
also singing a cappella, and the intensity in their faces makes you almost hear the music from the picture.
Exactly. I love that shot. That was a group by the name of A Soldier's Fancy, and I recently was able to find, I think, all of them by email to let them know it was in the book, and that is one of my photos that is appearing in the photo exhibit also. You're managing to focus on all those right photos, because it's only a 12-panel exhibit, and that one was so striking. I mean, we really had trouble choosing the 12 panels, but that one I thought was exceptional too. But again, it was just walking along Greenwich Village. It was a busker festival, I think it was. I think the Village Voice had sponsored a busker festival back around 83, I want to say. And they used to perform regularly in the area. And, whether they have an instrument in hand, or it's just the facial emotion, or even the hand motions, just the body posture, that's what I really look for. And again, I just try to do it without thinking about it, but yet while I'm listening, I try to become part of the music by shooting it.
Well, Stephanie, good luck with your show at the Country Music Hall of Fame, which is opening up in September. And your new book is From Every Stage, Images of America's Roots Music. We're listening to a little bit of Steve Riley, who's in this book by Stephanie Legend. And it's a pleasure to have you here on Soundcheck.
Thank you so much, Julie. I've enjoyed it.
Coming up, we're going to have a conversation and a live performance with another person who's very interested in the roots of country music, singer Laura Cantrell. Stay with us and Soundcheck. Yeah.
quartier. L'amour, j'arrive à la maison, ma petite femme après crêler. Manger, manger.